Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's bring in James Hamm here from the Insiders, our Kings Insider, fresh from Kings practice. Hammer, we listened to a little bit of what Doug Christie said today, a little bit of Devin Carter as well. It sounds like today's practice may not necessarily have been a good one. Sounds like it was a bit sloppy, and Doug even noted the lack of energy these guys had on their after their first day off.
Yeah, I think that happens sometimes. You know, you go through a week where you're working out really hard. Everything's super intense. You step away for a sec to catch your breath. You come back and you just kind of like, you're not locked in all the way. This is standard. Mm. There's always a bad day or two of practice. And, you know, sometimes I think coaches also manufacture that there's a bad day of practice to sort of push and to give them an opportunity to just like, again, cement what they're trying to preach. So we'll see. You don't want it to carry over, but kind of intrigued to see what this team looks like on Wednesday night when they take on the Raptors, and you know they go out there and they play against someone else. You know, it's one thing to put all this stuff in to your offense and defensive sets and all that stuff, and play against teammates that are also, you know, learning the same thing. It's a whole other thing when you go out and, you know, it's somebody new, and you got to show that this is something that's sustainable.
As I don't know if it was his words or not, but frustrated or got the word out there that today was a little bit of a tough practice, would you say that the one that the last practice they had before the day off was one where Doug and everybody else was proud of not only that practice, but what they had been doing that first week of training camp, and had a little bit of a positive feeling coming out of that first week going into a day off?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's the first training camp for Doug Christie. He's learning. We're learning him as the head coach. You know, the players are learning him. I think that's a lot of this. It's like a feeling out period that everyone has to go through. You want to make sure that you're doing the right things at a camp, right? And that it's going to equate to something on the court once the season starts. So far, like, look, there's a lot of running. There's a lot of transition defense. There's a lot of transition offense. There is a ton of scrimmage time. You know, again, they're doing a read and react system. You don't learn to read and react by going through drills. You got to play the game. And, you know, you can add different wrinkles and stuff into the read and react system, but the basics there are, you know, watching the body language of your teammates, knowing when they're going to cut one way and when they're going to cut another, knowing the difference between, you know, three different players who play the same exact position but run through a screen three different ways. You know, like, so if you're a player like Dennis Schroeder, who's new to not only the system but most of the players on the roster, you're going to have to pick up on these nuances, especially when you're the point guard. And that's what camp is about. It's about playing as much as possible. You know, you hear Doug say iron sharpens iron all the time. And that's just, you know, it's something that, you know, from Proverbs, but it's to make sure people understand that the best way to get better is to play against the high end competition that are NBA players. And, you know, whether it's your teammates or someone else, you need to practice hard. You need to practice like you're going to perform on game night. And that's what they're kind of going through right now.
Hammer, we heard a little bit from Devin Carter earlier. KC and I spent some time. I mean, you guys, the media guys, were, you know, talking to him about how he looks a little bit leaner. He looks in really good shape. I'm sure a lot of that is attributed to the fact he's actually had an off season and a chance to work out and train versus rehabbing. You know, those are two very separate things. Those are two very different types of workouts and trainings. He also talked a little bit about his shot. Casey and I were trying to figure out where, like, even if all things are pointing in a positive direction for Devin Carter, how exactly do you work him into this rotation?
Yeah, that's going to be the toughest thing. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest. You know, when you hear Doug Christie mention Neat Clifford as a potential backup point guard, when you hear him mention all the other guys that are going to play, you know, whether it's Keon Ellis, whether it's Malik Monk, whatever it is. And then when we talked to Devin, I asked him specifically about what has he done during the offseason to continue to grow as a point guard, because it's something that, you know, it's one thing to go out on the blacktop and be ball dominant and be the point guard, right? It's a whole other thing to be able to have point guard skills at the NBA level. And we talked to Malik about that last week, about, you know, how you have to watch the clock, how you've got to, you know, you've got to be getting the play call from the coach, how you've got to, you know, make sure that you're getting all of your guys involved in a game. Like, there's so many aspects to being a point guard that you don't just, like, go out there and start playing. It's like playing quarterback in the NFL. Like, it's nice and all that, you know, someone might have, like, a, you know, a photographic memory and can remember every single play that they're going to run. But there's also a whole group of guys who have the little thing that they flip open and they're reading the plays on their arm, right? Well, when you're an NBA point guard, there is no, you know, arm band with a whole bunch of plays on it. It's just go, go, go. And so it's not easy. I think Devin is in better shape than he was last year. I think it was interesting that, you know, he said the training staff has made sure that he does extra cardio during the off season. And, you know, sort of the buzz with him last year, it's tough to really, you know, like, I don't know, even break down what his season was like last year, because he went through an entire training camp where he just wasn't part of anything. Mm-hmm. He wasn't allowed to go out and run. He wasn't allowed to get on the floor at all. And then you're just missing out on so much of what's happening on an NBA, in the NBA world. You're not part of the team. You want to be part of the team, but when you're not out there working with them, you're not part of it. And so I think he does have a lot to learn, and he did have a lot to learn about being a pro. We heard things about whether he was working hard enough. We heard things about whether he was doing enough rehab. We heard things about his diet and it not being up to NBA snuff. And so at the end of the day, I think Devin Carter's probably better suited right now to walk into what should be a rookie season than he was last year. But overall, he looks good. He looks strong. He looks like, again, he'd been working out all season. I asked him about his shoulders. He said his shoulders are both great, which is something that, you know, again, we watched him in summer league and you could see his shoulder was bothering him in summer league. And that's not a good sign. So I think everything is pointing to him being ready. It's just going to be, you know, how can Doug get him on the court and whether he will get on the court. And there's no promises of that for sure.
Not to be redundant, but to you, does he look a little bit like a different player out there, like physically? Like, you see his shot, you see the way he moves. Does he look more confident? You talked about him saying looking like he's in good shape. Does he look like he's a little bit more ready for the second year of NBA basketball?
Yeah, I think so. And clearly he listens too much to the naysayers out there. That was another part of this. You could tell, number one, I don't think he really wanted to speak to the media. We asked for him earlier in the week and that didn't happen. And then, today, even it took a while to get him over to talk to us. You know, I think that he is someone who's young, who's on social media, who, is paying attention to too much stuff, which is not good. I'll say his shot, like the arc of his shot, it looks more normal, than like the, I don't even know what to call it, like the balloon, thing that was going on last year, and he's, you know, basically scraping the bottom of the scoreboard on 3-point attempts. So that looked better. He looks stronger. He does look more confident. You know, we saw him hit a game winner earlier in camp to beat the starters, and really got sort of a lot of fanfare. But he does look super confident just walking into every single shot. But I'll be honest with you, confidence has never been his issue. And you've seen that from way too many people. It's some of the other stuff. And so hopefully he got a little bit of humble pie during last season and the way things went, maybe even in summer league. And hopefully he's ready to kind of take that next step.
Let a naysayer know.
Bring that. Just bring that drop back. I don't even know why it's still there, but we. Sometimes you just got to let them know, Devin. Sometimes you just got to let them know. Drew Eubanks told you guys over the weekend that this is the hardest training camp he's been a part of in his time in the NBA. What is it that Doug is doing that is making it so difficult? Is it just the amount of running and getting up and down that these guys have done in the first, I guess, God, we're on like 7 or 8 days now?
Yeah, I think that's probably it. You know, Drew Eubanks, like he said, he gets there at like, I don't know what he say, 8:15, 7:15 in the morning, like to get his lift in and all that stuff. And he says, you turn around and you've been here for like 8 hours. Like, he's like, this has been a long, he said it's a good thing, but long and highly competitive. And I think that's the other thing. The way to break up the, like how long a day is to actually let them play. And so I know a lot of coaches that just get so much into the drills and so much into the film study, and they just drag these practices out way too long with talking. And I think more than anything else, what we've seen and sort of what we've heard from this camp is it's just like a lot of scrimmaging, and players love to play. At the end of the day, that's what they're there for. They love the game of basketball. And so I think, like, again, the highly competitive nature of this camp is a good thing. Like, we have to see how it translates to the court. Like, you could do a whole bunch of work on a specific offense or specific defense. You go out on Wednesday night and, you know, the Toronto Raptors could drop like 150 on you, and it's back to the drawing board. Or it's more like, okay, now we know what we need to work on. Or it could be like, hey, that was just, we're totally wrong with what we have out here and it's not going to work. And we've got to figure out something new. I think the biggest thing you're going to see, they're trying to get these guys in shape so they can pick up 94 feet. And we keep hearing that again and again and again. They're going to put pressure on the ball like as soon as you bring the ball in bounds. And it's one of the reasons they went out and got Dennis Schroeder. But also they're asking everybody to do it. And, you know, Dennis even talked about it today that, you know, it's funny to see Zach LaVine picking up 94 feet, to see, you know, DeMar DeRozan picking up 94 feet. He's like, everybody's doing it, which is good. It's sort of like the mantra that we're all going to be in this together. We're all together as a group. We're all like growing and figuring everything out. And that's the other thing everyone keeps talking about is the connectivity of the group. Everyone is very excited about just like the family feel that they have coming to the gym every day.
Can you think of another team, either one of you guys, that has done that in like your guys' years of watching basketball that picked up full court in the NBA? Like, we remember this stuff in college, but in the NBA, I can't really think of a team that did that all the way through. I know the Kings, the glory year Kings, Doug obviously did it. I think Bobby did it, you know, as well. But I don't feel like Mike Bibby did. I don't feel like Peja did. I can't think of another team where that was what they did. I don't want to say 1 through 15, but basically like all the guards would pick up full court.
Yeah, it's not going to be like five players picking up five offensive players full court every single possession. At least that it's going to be the point guards or a guard will pick up, you know, full court the entire time, right? And then the idea there is that three or four times a game, you're going to get somebody to make a silly mistake. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to look ahead. They're going to make a pass.
They're going to be annoyed by the fact that you're guarding them 93 feet from the basket.
Yeah, and you're trying to take them out of their offensive flow. That's the idea, right? You're trying to, you know, disjoint their offense. And so you're going to have people make mistakes. They're going to try to throw a pass that they shouldn't throw, and whether it's Keon or Keegan or Zach LaVine, they're going to be there. You want everyone not picking up 94 feet, but engaged for 94 feet. That's where it really does come. The other players need to be aware of what's happening, watching the guard, and then making plays off of that. So if you can slow everybody down, you know, make them get to 16, 18 seconds on the shot clock when they bring the ball across, then that's big, because now they're in panic mode. Now they're in that slow. They've already missed out on the opportunity for transition. Now they're trying to, you know, get into an offensive flow quickly, and then, you know, hopefully try to avoid like the last 8 seconds of shot clock where it's panic mode. And that's, as a defense, you're trying to get them into that last 8 seconds way more often than they're comfortable doing.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Is anyone at practice camp talking about offense, or is that just a frowned upon word? Is it Doug? Don't talk about that here.
I mean, they've got.
Think you brought it up, like, on media day and got in trouble.
Security.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get this guy out of here.
James, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, you're right. Like, it is something that Doug just keeps focusing on. We're going to have to see how it goes, though. Like, if the offense is just, like, ick in the first game, then that's going to be a problem. I think you're also, you know, you're trying to tire out the other team. You're trying to, you know, continuously attack them on the defensive end, be physical with them. I think the physicality is something we're going to have to watch for, you know, because that's sort of the other thing outside of running in camp. It's like they want to play a little bit of bully ball style and push people around and make people feel them. The offense is probably going to be like a little clunky to start, because again, reading and reacting is fine when you've been together for 2 or 3 years, but a lot of these players haven't been. So you're hoping that there will be continuity and they'll figure things out. You're also hoping that, you know, when Domantas Sabonis steps off the court, like, can Drew Eubanks run the same style offense? Mm-hmm. And he says yes. He said, yeah, you know, he's got that in his bag to be a passer and to set big screens and to be a DHO guy. It won't be nearly as much as Domas, because he's not the offensive threat that Domas is. But at the same time, they're hoping that they can carry over their offense from one group to the next. I'm still, it's my biggest concern. Like, the defense stuff, you can improve a group by, you know, having them play hard. Whether you can do it for 82 games, I'm not sure. Actually, I know you can't. There's going to be at least, you know, 15 or 20 games of major letdown, just because it's difficult to play that style, especially on back-to-backs and stuff. But the offensive end is kind of a mystery at this point. We're going to have to wait and see what it looks like once they step out on the court and they play against, you know, other teams that don't know their playbook, but also that don't really care.
You know, James, we talk a lot about the vibes and how, you know, the people there who are there every day, like yourselves, the Matt George, Jay Gayden, like, man, it feels a little different in there than we maybe anticipated. And vibes are up. Now, nobody's predicting that will turn into a 50-win season because of that. But in your opinion, how far can something like that go where people are on the same page? People do feel like they're all in it together and they're fighting for the same cause. I don't think that can put somebody in the NBA finals alone. Like, you still got to have the talent. But how far do you think that could go with, you know, winning games?
I think vibes can take you a long way. I do. But I also think that you've got to have a team that can withstand 4 or 5 losses in a row or 5 out of 7 and not let things snowball and get out of control. And so I think that's where you're hoping that vibes really like are huge. You know, if you get out, like if they get out to a quick start, I think the vibes will hold up. I think the vibes will be there, you know, 20, 30 games into the season. And then when you get to the All-Star break, that last sprint to the finish, the last like 25 games, it's really not that bad. So you're hoping that vibes can carry you until then as you're learning and growing as a team. But like, it's always going to be the question, what happens when things go south? Like, how do you react? And to be honest with you, we saw it last year. They didn't react well. They crumbled. They fired their coach. Best player asked to get traded. And, you know, vibes couldn't save anything. So now you're hoping that this type of mentality, and I think as much as vibes, I think it's like we're waiting to see the personality of this team, and we won't really know it until we see it. But it's that, you know, like I keep saying, the Taylor Jenkins, Memphis Grizzlies, I want to see if that's who they are, if they can play that style where they're physical at all times, where they don't give in, they don't quit. They give you everything they have for 48 minutes. And even in the last minute of a game, if you're up, if they're down 8, do they just cash it in? Do they quit? Or do they keep coming at you? And that's, I think, where, again, the vibes thing, like, show me who you are. Show me your personality. Show me that it's not just like we win when shots are going in and we lose when shots aren't. Because there's a lot more to basketball and a lot more ways to win a game than to just shoot the lights out and you know, be an offensive juggernaut.
Hammer, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, quite literally, new edition, can you stand the rain? Yeah. That's what these 2025.
I know all the days won't be perfect. But, this we know for sure.
This we know for sure. But can you stand the rain? Stand the rain.
Yeah. James knows.
Yep, I know those lyrics. Yeah, I have those tattooed on my forearm.
Yep, he definitely does. James, we'll come back. Actually, I kind of have a question along those lines. You just said something there that got my ears to perk up. So we'll continue to talk about the Sacramento Kings. They play basketball in 2 days at the Golden One Center. But we're not going anywhere because I just looked in the studio and Jesse's not there. So hey, we're going to go to commercial now because I don't want to ask James another question and then we go long. So we'll come back. But hey, you're getting married at the end of the week, so it doesn't matter.
Jesse said, I'm out of here.
Jesse's like, hey.
I'm not mad at
him. It in.
I really got nothing to worry about today. We'll come back. We'll continue this conversation with our insider from the Insiders. It's James Hamm here with D-Lo and KC on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 13.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
20. All right, we're back here with our insider, Kings Insider from the Insiders, 10 to 12 here on ESPN 1320, our man James Hamm. James, we were talking just a second ago. It feels like, as we were talking about kind of weathering the storm here of this upcoming season, it feels important that the Sacramento Kings get off to a good start. It feels like that might be able to maybe put some anxiety behind them, maybe put last season behind them. It just feels like a good start to the season might be crucial, even if it's just to this mindset, even if it's just for the mindset of the Sacramento Kings. Whereas you talk about weathering the storm, can you survive losing 3, 4, or 5 games in a row? Well, I feel like that would be easier to survive if you got off to a decent start and you're not immediately, trying to play catch up right out of the gate.
No, I totally agree. I mean, if you go back to Dream Team 1, I think, but they lost the first 4 games of the season, right? And then they never lost more than 3 in a row ever again. And I think they only lost 3 in a row like one time during the regular season, and then really, really late in the year, they might have lost like the last 3 when they were in coaster mode.
Yeah.
Right. So there was a resiliency to that team. And every time you thought that they were going to get stomped, they just showed up and beat people. And it was like really, really surprising wins. I seem to remember like a Denver win on the road, and you're like, whoa, didn't see that one coming. And every time you thought things were going to snowball and get out of control, they were able to rein it back in and find some positivity. That can be like hopefully part of the brand of who this team is, but we won't know until they get there. And we won't know, again, the kumbaya, great vibes and all that stuff. Can it withstand a really clunky start? And I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. I do think that, people are pulling for Doug, like within the organization they are, within the, the front office they are, but also like, I think the players, they're super engaged with Doug. They like that he's a former player. We've heard that a lot, sort of like he understands what it takes to be great because he's been there, he's done it. And, you can go back, it doesn't matter how many times I ask Keon Ellis if he's watched footage of Doug Christie and he still hasn't, there is a point where, if you're old enough, if you're DeMar DeRozan, if you're, Zach LaVine, who, grew up in Seattle, who Doug Christie is as a player and what he was able to do on the court as a player. And so there's a, a bit of respect and reverence for the fact that, like, he's been there. He's a guy who was, an all NBA defender, and he made, first and second team all NBA defensive teams multiple times in his career. He was actually at one point, wasn't he 4th in defensive player of the year voting? Like, this is a dude that isn't just talking. He actually knows what he's talking about because he's been there and he's done it. And again, a lot of these guys, their heroes are Kobe Bryant and players like that. This is one of those guys that was out there slowing down Kobe Bryant as well as anyone else in the league. And so there is a certain amount of respect and reverence that they do have for Doug and sort of the process here. So hopefully that, again, carries over.
And that goes both ways, too, because Doug played when he's trying to relay information or trying to get them to do something. He can sit up there and say, like, I know it's not as easy as me telling you this is what you have to do. Like, I get it. I've been in those shoes where – yeah, you know this is what you're supposed to do, but you're going up against Kobe or T-Mac, and they're just otherworldly. But if you can understand what you're supposed to do and stick to the script of the game plan that we have, at the end of the day, I think we'll be able to come out of this thing in the win column because of the strategy that we have for us. And I think that goes a long way with players, where it's not somebody who hasn't played or hasn't competed on that level telling them this is what you have to do and you're wrong if you don't do it. It's just not that simple. Mm-hmm. And Doug can relay, I understand that it's not that simple, but you got to try it. You know what I mean? You got to attempt it. Or like he mentioned earlier, if you see something different, tell me and we can try and work through that together.
Yeah, I think also to that, I mean, you bring up T-Mac. That's another guy who these guys all idolized. Well, Doug played with Tracy McGrady his first 3 years in the league, his first 2 years in the league. He played with Vince Carter. You know, it's not just that he played for the Kings and all that stuff. It's not just that, he played defense against some of the great players in the league. No, he was literally the guy who had to defend Kobe Bryant. Like, so there is, again, a certain amount of respect that you have to pay Doug. And that's why, you know, like when I'm messing with Keon Ellis about going and watching Doug Christie footage, like Keon should be watching Doug Christie footage. He should be watching Bruce Bowen footage. He should be watching some of the great perimeter defenders like in that we've ever seen. You know, Mike Brown compared Keon Ellis to Bruce Bowen like 2 years ago, and like his ability to fight through screens and all that stuff. Like, if you don't know who that is, you should really look it up. It's just like, you know, years ago when Willie Cauley-Stein was asked about, you know, watching Dennis Rodman footage to learn how to, you know, sort of get a leg up on rebounding, he's like, no, why would I do that? It's like, well, because he was 6'7" and 5 times the rebounder you've ever dreamed of being. Like, he's just way better than you, and you should watch what he does without the gift of, you know, a 7'3" wingspan and a 6'11" leaping body. Like, go watch some footage, try to get better. And so I'm intrigued again, like watching Doug go out on the floor last year, late in the season, and work with Zach LaVine on like some defensive nuance stuff. We're like, huh, look at that. That's interesting. But now he's running a team and it's going to be different. There's not going to be so many of those moments. And you're hoping that his ideas that he's putting out on paper actually work when you get out on the floor.
You talk about ideas working, and we've heard guys through the course of last week talk about implementing certain things on the offensive end. Do we know, again, I know it's not something you guys talk to Doug a lot about, but do we have any idea what exactly he's trying to change on the offensive end?
No. I mean, outside of it being a read and react system, like there's going to be a lot of splits. He keeps talking about that. I think it'll be like there'll be some horn sets and stuff like that, but they're going to move Domantas Sabonis around all over the court. It's not just going to be Domantas Sabonis at the nail. It's not going to be him setting the high DHO at the top of the key all the time. I think they're going to move him around. They're going to let him play in the corner a little bit. They're going to have him work two-man games with almost every single player. I do think that we're going to see a lot of like a Domas-centric offense. At least that's what, you know, like they're intimating to us, but once we have to see it on the court and see how it's actually working.
And he had talked earlier in training camp or last week about being in a different spot and being, do you help me out with this, Ham? Did he say he is in more of a dunker spot now, or that's where they had him last year? Talking about Domas.
No, he said last year he was in the dunker spot more often than he had been in previous years, which is why his assist totals went down from 8.2 to 6.2 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like they moved him down lower, and that's not what he was, you know, hoping to do. Yeah. Like I think in a perfect world, Domas is slinging the ball all over the court from the top of the key, mm-hmm. right? Because if you can move him, it doesn't let a defense sort of isolate him and run two players at him, which is, again, where the Kings ran in all kinds of trouble, because if they double-team him quickly at the high post, first of all, the double-team can come from any angle, right? If you're at the high post, if you're just standing at the top of the key or the nail, right? So if you're there, like the off-guard can come over and double-team. A second guy can, you know, sort of like the power forward can come over and double-team. And that's where I think we saw like the big mistake games where Domas would have like 6, 7, 8 turnovers in a game. And it really limited the Kings offense, right? So if you can move him around a bunch, have him all over the court, getting in these like small 2-man games, 3-man games, overloading one side, all that stuff, I think they can actually get away with doing more and not having so many, you know, again, like major turnover games or major mistake games where he's just getting double teamed and your offense goes to hell in a handbasket.
Is there an opportunity for Domas to be even better than he's been as a Sacramento King so far? Or have we seen, because we've talked about DeMar and Zach and them being better in their second years, Keegan taking a step forward, Keon in this new role under Doug Christie. But, yeah, what about Domas? Like, Domas has had really good numbers. Domas was considered a centerpiece of this team when De'Aaron Fox was here. Can that be rekindled and brought back to life now with Schroeder and LaVine having a full season and DeMar having his second season here?
I think it can be. I also think it's one of the few ways like out of this mess for the Kings. You know, you have a guy who has a very specialized skill set, and we're acting like he had a reduction in stats. I mean, the guy averaged like 19, 14 and 6 last year, and 19, 12 and a half and 8 the year before that. I mean, this is an elite basketball player who's considered by most a top 20 player in the league. So, like, I do think that there are ways in which he can impact the game more. But, you know, we're going to have to wait and see how it all works out. I like him as, you know, again, Doug will talk about this, but, like, the Chris Webber, Vlade Divac passing from the high post. You know, the Kings haven't run a bunch of back cuts. They haven't run, you know, a bunch of off-ball stuff that you can, you know, drop a pass to the baseline where Keegan Murray is flying in from the corner for a wide open dunk. They just don't do it. So I think we're going to see more of that, sort of the craftiness. And, you know, I would even point to, like, remember that there are players on this Kings team, like in the early 2000s, that were super limited in what they could do. A guy like Lawrence Funderburk, right? How many times do you remember Lawrence Funderburk standing under the basket by himself, catching a wide open pass and just going up and dunking? It happened all the time. And it's because so much focus is on all the perimeter pieces, Mike, making sure Mike Bibby's not shooting three or Peja, you know, keeping your eye on Doug for cuts from the top. But it was always these other tertiary guys that, you know, again, I don't think Lawrence Funderburk could dribble the ball like three times, but he sure could score 8 points a game each and every single night he walked out on the court. Because he was always wide open in the post and always had these like these mismatches. And I think the Kings are going to try to replicate some of that where, you know, again, everyone touches a ball and everyone's moving because you got to be alert because the ball might hit you at any time. And that's where I think they do believe that they have like a smart, like basketball intelligence wise team, a group that is experienced and should be able to take on more and be more than they were last year without making wholesale changes to the roster.
We've talked a lot about this guy and, you know, some may even think too much and put too much on his plate, but you've seen Dennis Schroeder in practice. Has he brought anything noticeable in the time that you've seen these guys playing and getting up and down? Do you see any of the Dennis Schroeder effect at all so far in the times that you've been able to get to practice and see these guys playing?
Yeah, I mean, what little we have seen, we got to see that one exchange with him and Malik. And, you know, like, I think if you go back and look at Dennis Schroeder, the player, like, he's gritty, right? Mm-hmm. He does the little things. Like, again, I don't know why I'm referencing the early 2000 Kings, but remember watching Vlade Divac grab hold of somebody's like the side of their shorts when they're going up for a rebound, and he would go up with his offhand, hold the guy down on the ground with one hand and reach him and grab a rebound with another. And it was like these little tiny subtle plays that made Vlade so good, where he was thinking the entire time. That's kind of what Dennis Schroeder is. Like, he's an agitator. We learned that years ago when he punched DeMarcus Cousins, fighting through a screen, accidentally punched him in the groin area, the groin area.
Damn groin.
Yeah. but I think that's what he brings. He brings like a little bit of nastiness, and you don't usually get guards that bring a little bit of nastiness. And if you do, it's usually packaged in like the Patrick Beverley, like out of control and really bad offensive player type package. I think that's where Schroeder's a little different. He's a true point guard who has this nasty streak to him. So I liked watching him and Malik Monk, because Monk isn't that guy. He's a talker, but he's not, you know, he's not a bully on the court in any stretch of the imagination. So to watch Schroeder get into him and then to, you know, foul him, and Monk's rolling around on the ground, calling for the foul. And it was just like a reminder that you brought in a guy who again, it doesn't mind mixing it up and is going to get physical with people. So kind of cool to see.
You heard it here first.
Oh, I knew. I was hoping it flew over your head.
Dennis Schroeder. Nasty boy.
Terrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, no.
Nasty boy.
Oh, no, indeed.
Basketball reference. Here we go.
Well, send this clip to him. Send this clip to him.
Send him the clip. Yep.
What do you think we see Wednesday? You think, I mean, is it like last year, if memory serves me correctly, we got a quarter of DeMar, De'Aaron, Domas, like, or maybe we got a, did we get a half or just, no, we got a quarter. It was a single, it was like 36-30 or something like that. It was the most electric quarter of the year. What do you think we see on, or do you have any idea of what we'll see on Wednesday at the Golden 1 Center?
Yeah, Doug said that there was a script and he's going to try to stick to it. We don't know what that script is. You know, every coach is different how they want to approach training camp and how they want to approach preseason games. Doug did bring up today that, you know, like in the past, there was like 8 preseason games. And so you could kind of develop like what's happening out on the court in those preseason games. But now that it's all the way down to 4 preseason games, you kind of got to go with what, with your starters for longer periods, especially game 2, game 3. Game 4 is usually like, I don't know. Sometimes you play, sometimes you don't. But the first couple of games, I think this team has, they need to be on the court. They need to be out there, and they need to be on the court against different looks. And to be honest with you, Toronto is probably a really good team for them to face right away. I don't know if Scotty Barnes is going to play because he got hurt last week. But I do think that when you're looking at that Toronto Raptors team, that's a team with the length and athleticism the Kings don't have. And so, you know, it's one thing to practice a whole bunch against, you know, players that know the play that's coming, which is what training camp is. It's a whole nother thing to practice against a bunch of guys who don't have the length and athleticism that you're going to face in a lot of the games you play during the regular season. So getting out there and seeing how you look, not against your group of players, but against somebody else, it actually matters.
Yeah, I would like to see them maybe for a half in most of these 4 games. Like, I could think maybe the last game would be just a quarter, but Wednesday I'd like to see them for a half, the 2 games in the middle, maybe 3 quarters or into the 3rd quarter. Because like you mentioned, Ham, they've got to play. They got to play out there on the court and get a feel not only for those guys as teammates, but Doug get a feel for rotations and how he wants to use it as a true dress rehearsal for what you're trying to do in the regular season.
Yeah, I hope we see it too. You know, that, and if you want to sit here and talk to them about like how, what kind of shape you need to be in, it's fine if you can go out there for a quarter and play defense like he's asking. It's fine if you can get up to like a half, but this team is going to have to play defense for 48 minutes or it's not going to work, right? Especially with the intensity that they want, because what you're doing with like the defensive intensity is you're trying to mask a bunch of your weaknesses, right? You're trying to make your opponent make mistakes. And so you can get out in transition and get easy buckets and stuff like that. That's what the idea here is, that you play hard-nosed defense. Sure, in the half court, it'll work sometimes. You know, you got to stay in front of your man and all that stuff. But I think overall, like the idea here is to be like frenetic and crazy, a little bit more like the 2017-18 Kings, where they just got out and ran with a bunch of young guys that didn't know what they were doing. And you're trying to, again, mask some of the deficiencies. This is, you're masking deficiencies that you have on the defensive end and trying to get some easy buckets on the offensive end. Because if you can get easy buckets on the offensive end, you know, in transition, it starts to pull the court one way. And so it could open some of the spacing that they're looking for. But again, they don't, this team doesn't even have like a true rim runner on the team. And that's how a lot of transition basketball right now works, is you have the big man run all the way to the basket and sort of sink the defense back so you can get transition looks. And they don't have that, or even not transition looks, but early shot clock looks, right? And we haven't seen this team have that ability or the sort of the players to do that. So maybe Drew Eubanks can get out and run. He is fast. He is known for that. But also, you know, maybe Maxime Reyneau can do some of that.
I know one thing we will see. We're going to see the Kings guard 94 feet on Wednesday.
That's right. Yeah.
they are going to be out there guarding full court right out the gate, mm-hmm. even if it's just for a quarter. And I don't think it will be. Whatever Doug's vision is with this 94 feet thing, we're going to see it on Wednesday. And then again on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then again, whenever the next game is after that. And then again, whenever the next game is after that. He's not going to wait till the regular season to implement that strategy.
I agree.
I can't wait to see
this is going
to
be pressure. You're going to see pressure, and hopefully it works. Hopefully they capture something here. They've got good athletes. It's not, they just don't have the length and athleticism that you're going to run into like with an Orlando or with a Toronto, some of the bigger teams in the league. But yeah, it should be fun to watch. And like, look, the two teams in the finals did a lot of this 94 feet thing, you know, a lot of them.
And to be fair, those two teams in the finals, you talk about, the measurables, they're not that far off of what the Kings got. Like, or OKC isn't this super like 6'7" across the board. Like, no,
6'7". I hate myself.
They got SGA, Jalen, Lou Dort, Caruso. Like, none of those guys are over 6'5", but they get after it. They are physical with an F, as Mike Singletary used to say. Mm-hmm. Like, they get after it, and I think Doug Christie's trying to create maybe a mini version of that. If there was a more or less for where the Kings might pick up, mm-hmm. like if it was like 92.5 mm-hmm. on Prize Picks, I'd go more, because I'm with you. They're gonna pick up 94 feet, all mm-hmm. of them, all five of the guys that might get up there guarding point guards. And if they have anything else like that, like a Taco Tuesday or a max discount, download the Prize Picks app. Put in the promo code KIFM to get $50 towards your first $5 lineup. That's promo code KIFM to get $50 towards your first $5 lineup. You must be present in certain states. Go to prizepicks.com for more details. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. West Sac Kings fan, also known as WSKF.
Who calls him WSKF? Who does that?
It's on the leaderboard.
And why did you highlight Norm? Now Norm thinks he won, but you highlighted man.
He didn't.
Nobody calls him West WSKF.
It's
why
right
do you
here.
Acronym everything?
WSKF. It's right there. He's got his second win.
This
of the
show
season.
Has jumped the shark. Man, you talking about. You talk about jumping the shark, man. Hey, our boy's getting married on Friday.
Yeah.
Hey, our boy's getting married on Friday.
Let's go.
Hey, man, enjoy the next week. Enjoy the next 2 weeks, man. I will really struggle without you for the next 2 weeks.
You guys will be all right.
Well, I just hope we're here when you get back.
Me too.
Because if it's like a lot could happen while you're away, and I would just blame you for all of it. So,
shout out to you guys in the chatty house real quick for all the congratulations and well wishes. I appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate you, man. This show and me in particular can very literally not function without you. So we're gonna put that to the test for the next couple of weeks. But we're going to do it for a good cause, man. So we're happy for you and Crystal. Can't wait to celebrate with you guys, on Friday. And, can't wait to have you back here, leading into the Kings regular season opener, man. So congratulations to our man, Jesse. Big thanks to our man, James Hamm, for being with us. And we'll be back to, recap tonight's Monday Night Football mm-hmm. game. Mm-hmm. College football playoff or college football rankings we didn't get to talk about today. WNBA finals we didn't get to talk about. We got a lot to catch up on after a busy Monday here covering the NFL. So we'll see you here tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Jesse and Crystal.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.